more than I saw him. Maybe I just wanted it to be him. The balcony at the theater is too far away to clearly see anyone's face, but when he winked at me, I was pretty sure that it was him. There was an unmistakable sparkle that I recognized. As far as I know, he didn't leave a note or try to make contact with me in any other way. It would be good to see him again, but I don't expect to. Though I do continue to think and dream about him, somehow I feel that he is somewhere close, watching. Much has changed in the last 5 years, and because of Michael, my life is continually changing for the better. My relationship with music is allowing me to play better than ever, and everyone can tell. It took me a while, but now I think I understand what it meant when I was told that I needed to stop playing the instrument. These days, even though I'm not yet consistent, I do my best to play music instead of the bass. I've become a regular member of Jonell's band and continue to play with the Cliff Notes when time allows. I feel fortunate that staying busy and keeping my head above water is no longer a struggle. Recently, I heard about a bluegrass musician who is forming a jazz band to perform a few songs on a television show. He heard about me through a mutual friend and wants me to contact him. I'm not sure if my style will work with his. My taste for bluegrass hasn't fully developed yet, but since he's putting together a jazz band, I may give him a call. Being recognized and sought out by local musicians has done a lot for my self-esteem. When the local music society awarded me the honor of Nashville Bass Player of the Year, it came as a surprise. The second time, even though I sort of expected it, was still a great honor and has led to other opportunities. The recognition of my peers makes me feel wonderful, and I appreciate all of it, but I'm always sure to keep myself in check. What is more dangerous to a person, success or failure? Michael once asked me. I know people who have been hurt on both sides of that fence. A few acquaintances of mine were almost unrecognizable after they had achieved success. They turned into people I never would have chosen as friends. A few others gave up after just a few failures, allowing their lifelong dreams to dissipate. I decided to do my best not to fall into either of those categories. I'm now also being asked by music stores and colleges to teach master classes and clinics. I don't consider myself a master of anything, nor do I have much class, but even though I never attended college, I guess I do have a few things to offer. People repeatedly ask me which music schools I've attended. Michael's School of Music and Life, I'm always tempted to say, but never have. I haven't told many people about my experiences with him. Even my girlfriend hasn't heard the whole story. I'm always willing to share the lessons learned, but rarely do I tell anyone where I learned them. Who would believe me anyway? I mean, I never found out who Michael really was or where he came from. The more time goes by, the more I start to think that maybe, just maybe, he came from my imagination. From some unused portion of my mind where he's now going back to live again. I can still hear him knocking around in there much of the time. Like I said, it's as if he's constantly rearranging the furniture. I think about all of them a lot. Michael, Uncle Clyde, Sam, and Isis. Why were these bizarre people sent to me? Or was I sent to them? Either way, the short time we spent together brought me further along the path of music than I ever could have imagined. You see, to me, they are music. It was made clear to me that music is related to everything, especially nature and language. But in order to speak it naturally, I had to first make myself part of it. Music herself told me that, and now that I understand what she was talking about, I can fully appreciate the lyric, "I once was lost, but now I'm found." Now, regarding Isis, I don't know which was stranger, her or her information. Anyway, it's taking me nearly 5 years, but now I can clearly see the part numbers playing music. All music can be broken down into numbers. And since music and life are the same, I guess that life is numbers too. I once heard someone say that all of life could be broken down into a mathematical equation. That's too much math for me, but I guess anything is possible. I do know that Nashville musicians have figured out a way to read and write music without using letters at all. They call it the Nashville number system. Sam and I are now constant companions. He's the only one with whom I can share Michael's stories. We hang out together and help each other assimilate all that we're still learning. Although I progressed enough to be able to show him a few things, Sam still does most of the teaching. Uncle Clyde died a few years ago. At least, that's what I think happened. It made me think about a saying I once heard Michael use. It had something to do with a library being lost every time an elderly person dies. That definitely applies to Clyde. I know that I'd only gotten a glimpse of the knowledge inside his mind. I used to visit him regularly until one day he and his few belongings were gone. When I asked people in the area about him, no one seemed to know who I was talking about. A few people said they remembered something about a car accident. Maybe it was the one I witnessed, the one where Michael and Clyde's help brought a man back to life. I seemed to be the only one who had a clear recollection of the man who lived under the bridge. That was strange, but there was something more bizarre than that. When I went to visit Clyde for the last time, there was nothing left under the bridge except his harmonica. It was sitting right there out in the open, apparently waiting for me. I was surprised that no one had taken it. Michael would have said that Clyde left it for me, and I'm sure that Clyde would have wanted me to have it, so I took it. I was sad that day. The most peculiar part of the story lies in the fact that when I picked up his harp, I could play it. When I first touched it, I knew I could play it, so I did. Right then and there, all by myself, I played. When I returned home and took out Clyde's instrument, the feeling wasn't there, so I didn't attempt to play it again and haven't since. I know that I'll regain the feeling when the time is right. A similar thing happened with Isis. After getting a better handle on what she had talked about, I went back to the bookstore to ask her more questions. To my surprise, there were no signs of her anywhere in the store. Even her table was gone. The sales clerk told me that they didn't offer gift wrapping and never had. Feeling unsure of myself, I didn't ask if Isis had ever worked there. When I returned to my car, there was a blank card stuck under the left windshield wiper. When I pulled the card out and flipped it over, I was shocked. There was nothing on it but a handwritten circle, the number 0. I was bewildered. I wandered all around the parking lot looking for Isis. She couldn't have gone far. I listened for the jingle of her bells. There was nothing. I started to go back into the store to ask more questions, but something told me to just let it be. Tired, dazed, and confused, I got in the car. As I cranked the engine, a song by the Beatles just happened to be playing on the radio. Paul McCartney's lyrics eased my mind as his soothing voice filled the air. Let it be. I did just that, and I keep that card in my wallet at all times. Believe it or not, I've also kept in touch with the red-shouldered hawk. Or maybe it's he who has kept in touch with me. He's chosen to follow me since I moved to the woods west of town. The nest he shares with his bride is just a short walk from my log cabin. Whenever I get the certain feeling, I go outside and he's usually sitting there on a low limb. I just watch him stare at me, tilting his head from side to side. He acts as if he has something to tell me, or maybe he's just checking up on me. Although I try, I haven't gotten him to land on my arm yet. Maybe one day. Following Michael's instruction, I've started meditating every day. Well, almost every day. It has really helped me in all aspects of my life, especially with my connection to music in the natural world. I've also become a fairly decent naturalist and tracker. I attribute most of it to daily meditation. Things are really going well now that I've processed most of what Michael has shown me. His lessons and concepts were relatively simple to grasp once I was made aware of them. I also had to become familiar with his teaching style. For example, when he first told me that notes were overrated, I didn't quite understand what he was getting at. I found out later that he didn't actually believe that statement. He told me that just to make me focus more on the other elements. He felt, as I now do, that the other elements are neglected by most teachers and musicians and that they need more attention. I finally understand it. His stretching the truth style of teaching was new to me, but once I understood how and why it was used, I added it to my own teaching method. Awareness was also an integral part of his teaching, and it's become a part of mine. He made me aware of things that I'd never thought about. Now that I've tuned into his way of thinking, I've made it my own and produced my own miracles. One day, while I was in an art museum in Paris, a strange thing happened. I noticed a string of faint but glowing tracks on the marble floor. I'd never seen tracks like those, so I did what any tracker would have done. I followed them. They led me to a kid who'd been separated from his parents. He told me that he'd stopped to look at something, and when he turned around, they were gone. His tears were almost too much for me to bear. I found an employee and told her what was going on. That led to the quick and happy reunion with his family. The incident wasn't as strange as the fact that the whole thing took place in French. I'd never spoken French until that moment. It was later that I remembered getting the tingling feeling when I saw the boy's tears. It was the same feeling I get every time I sense the hawk or when I picked up Uncle Clyde's harmonica and realized I could play it. The feeling is still kind of surreal. Like a premonition, it always precedes the experience. Whenever it shows up, I know that something special is soon to follow. I finally understand my childhood attraction to Spider-Man. It's as if I have my very own spidey sense. When I returned from Paris, it started happening all the time. I would just know things without knowing where the knowledge came from. At first, it surprised me, but now I expect it. This confidence makes it come on even stronger. Every time it happens, I joke with myself that it's Michael inside my head. Thinking my base is a new habit of mine. I used to give thanks only when I was about to eat a meal, but now I say thank you to everything. I thank my headaches, my clothes, my television, and my life. And I thank music. I thank everything all the time, and it really makes a difference. The first time I really thanked my base was an amazing experience. The whole concept was new to me. I wasn't sure what I was supposed to do, but I poured myself into it. I thanked the tuning pegs for enduring the heat as they were being melted down. I thanked the strings for being wound and twisted. I thanked the wood for being cut, scraped, and sanded. I thanked the wires, the pickups, the electronics, and batteries. I even thanked the people and thoughts involved in manufacturing each part. I thanked everything I could think of for going through what it went through in order to produce an instrument for my benefit. I also apologize for not doing so before. The whole process took about 20 minutes. Once I was finished, I stood up, put my guitar in its case, and picked up my other bags. As I bent down to pick up my bass, it seemed to lift itself and fly over my shoulder. I stood there in shock. Usually the case alone is enough to give me a backache, but that time it felt as light as a feather. Oh man, Michael. This stuff really works. The strangest of all coincidences happened while I was visiting my parents in Virginia. I was in between tours and had decided to go back to my hometown for a few days of vacation. While I was there, I made contact with many old friends and spent some quality time with my folks. I decided, for some reason, to go out jogging early one morning. When I got outside, I realized that it was a bit chillier than I'd thought. I hadn't dressed appropriately. The sun had not yet risen enough to warm the day. Running was not my favorite hobby, and I was not about to run while cold. Not wanting to waste any time, I went back to my parents' house to grab the first thing I could find to stay warm. Realizing that I'd locked myself out of their house, I grabbed my mom's yellow rain jacket off the porch and the wide-brimmed brown hat my dad used for gardening. Since my folks weren't up yet, I figured I could use the garments without them being missed. I realized that the clothes, along with my blue running tights, would make me a peculiar sight. I ran further than I thought I would that morning. Not being an experienced jogger, I found myself exhausted several miles from my parents' house. I'd forgotten that I would have to run back. I decided to walk. On my way home, I decided to take a shortcut, or so I thought, through a department store parking lot. From a distance, I noticed what looked like a unicycle leaning against the store's garbage dumpster. Getting closer, I realized I was right. A longtime fan of the circus, I took the unicycle, planning to make it rideable someday. The rim was bent, making the wheel wobble as I rode it down the street. The town had changed a lot since I was last there. That, coupled with the shortcut, had me thoroughly disoriented. Once I realized I was lost, it happened. It started with the now familiar tingle, which was stronger than usual that day. I didn't know what it was or what it meant, but I knew that something or someone was speaking to me. I heightened my awareness and sent out my feelers in every direction. Nothing stood out, so I kept walking until I reached the next apartment complex. It was there that things started to feel familiar, although nothing was recognizable. As I walked by, I noticed a flash of light come from somewhere on the third floor of one of the buildings. I wondered if it was just a reflection from the sun. Unable to ignore it, I found myself walking up the stairs to the third floor, unicycle in tow. Once I reached the area where the flash had come from, I noticed I was standing outside an apartment. The door was right in front of me. Don't ask me why, but I just walked right in. As I entered the apartment, I could immediately tell I was in a single man's home. Stuff was scattered everywhere. I looked across the room and noticed a young man in his early 20s sleeping on the couch with, you guessed it, an electric bass guitar in his lap. Interesting. I walked over to get a closer look. As soon as I was standing in front of him, his eyes opened.
Who are you?
He asked, maybe calmer than he should have been. Not knowing what else to say, I went with my gut.
I am your teacher.
Teacher of what?
Nothing.
How'd you get in here?
You asked me to come.
I did? Did I give you a key?
I don't need a key.
What are you going to teach me?
Nothing.
What do you mean nothing?
Exactly that. Nothing. I can teach you nothing because no one can teach anybody anything. But I can show you things.
Can you show me music?
Yes, I can, but not as well as music herself can show you.
What do you mean music herself?
You'll see. Or not, I answered, sporting a Cheshire Cat grin of my own.
If you're not a teacher, who are you, and what do I call you?
I thought before I answered. I could have told him anything. Victor, I said. Call me Victor.
Okay, Victor, let's get started then.
Wow, he's already much further along than I was.
I wasn't sure if I was as ready as my new student seemed to be. Then I realized what was happening. For the first time, I fully understood what Michael was getting at when he told me something about being the keeper of the flame.
Remember, it is easy to learn to play your instrument, but playing it well is not enough. It is time for you to enter the world of a true musician. It is time for you to become an ally of music and share her blessings. You are now the keeper of the flame. Please keep that flame alive, and do not, I say, do not allow music to die.
What am I getting myself into? I'm not Michael. This is his gig, not mine.
But I was there, and he wasn't. So I decided to go with it. What else was I to do? As I started to take a seat, I glanced down at myself, realizing what I must look like. Dress and act ordinary, and you produce ordinary students, were the words that came to mind. I decided at that moment to do my best to live up to that statement. Michael would be proud. Playing with that kid's mind was already fun, and I was looking forward to more. Accepting my new role, I took my seat, pulled the brim down over my eyes, and held the unicycle in my lap. Sitting, poised, and ready, I prepared to strum the spokes.
"Where do you want to begin?" I asked the kid.
As he sat up in his chair, an all too familiar phrase was spoken.
Boy, do I have a lot to learn.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.